Greetings. My name is Bill Kladke. I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Edgar Wiggins, who's Executive Director of Baltimore Crisis Response. And this is the second show we're doing with Edgar because BCRI, Baltimore Crisis Response, Inc., is doing so many things and so many important critical things that we should make sure that we are aware of all the various ways that they can help Baltimoreans. So, Edgar, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, thank you so much for coming back. I appreciate your sparing us the time. I know you're busy. Could you first tell our listeners about Baltimore Crisis Response?
Baltimore Crisis Response Incorporated is Baltimore City's first and only behavioral health crisis organization. We have a full range of services that are available to people in need 24 hours a day, and that includes our telephone crisis hotline, our mobile crisis teams that go out and visit people in the community and provide assessments and crisis intervention. We have two residential programs where people can come and stay with us for short periods of time, get evaluated by a psychiatrist, get medication, get supportive counseling. And we also respond to traumatic events. You know, sometimes there's a sudden death, like a suicide or something that's tragic, and we're able to go out and offer help to not only individuals, but really community groups. So there's a lot that we do under this umbrella of crisis services.
Yeah, and a lot that is needed. Thank you. What's your background and responsibilities?
I am the founding CEO of this organization, which means that I have been in this job for 28 and a half years.
Wow.
So I started this program from the ground up with the support of the local behavioral health authority. But prior to that, I mean, I've been in Baltimore now for 32 years, but I'm originally from Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, I ran just about every kind of mental health treatment program available. I ran large outpatient departments. I ran partial hospitalization programs. I ran psychosocial rehab programs. And I also myself worked part-time on Philadelphia's suicide and crisis intervention line. So I am very familiar with, you know, some of the needs that people have when they're in acute crisis, and also when people are threatening to die in hand. So it's a special kind of work, and I feel privileged to have been in this field all this many years.
Well, my goodness, 28 and a half years, you've been really an asset to the community, and that's for certain. Let's talk about the need for your services.
Oh, my goodness. That is an excellent question. I really believe that there are a tremendous amount of unmet needs for behavioral health services. Mm-hmm. And I think those needs are unmet for a lot of reasons. First of all, sometimes people don't know how to access behavioral health care, you know, how to access mental health care, how to access substance abuse treatment. So I think that's one issue, is really a lack of information about those kinds of situations. But the other thing that I think, Bill, is so important is the stigma that's associated with having a mental illness or a behavioral health need. You know, if you've got diabetes, you know, you go to doctors. If you have hypertension, you go to doctors. If you don't feel well, you know, you reach out to your family physician or your healthcare provider. But when you don't feel well psychologically and emotionally, often there's a lot of stigma that's associated with those kinds of problems. And stigma really is a huge barrier to people getting the kind of help and support that they need. And one of the ways that I know this is because, you know, a lot of times people will come to us in crisis and will say, well, gee, how long have you been depressed? How long have you had these anxiety attacks? How long have you been thinking about dying by your own hand? And people will talk about weeks, months, sometimes years. And you say, well, gee, why did you wait till you got in crisis before you reached out? And they'll say, well, you know, my family, we don't talk about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Where I come from, people look down on people like that. I worried about what my neighbors would say. I worried about what the people in my church would say. So those kinds of ideas really do hinder people from reaching out. You know, May is Mental Health Month, so it's in the forefront of a lot of people's minds. You know, you turn on the TV, you read the paper. But, you know, Mental Health Month is every month of the year.
Right.
And so we really need to be talking about the mental health needs of the community. The other thing is that sometimes people don't know where to turn. And, you know, there are insurance issues, there are issues of payment. Sometimes there can be long waits before you can get an appointment in a clinic. I mean, there are lots of things that really keep people from reaching out. But we know that there's a need because all you have to do is turn on the TV.
Yeah.
You know, look in the paper.
Yeah,
right?
The barriers are incredible. They're incredible.
They really are. They really are. And one of the things that I didn't talk about, I don't think, but is really important is our work with the Baltimore Police Department, because for years we have been involved with training police officers so that they are better equipped to deal with people in crisis. And so they can use de-escalation techniques, verbal de-escalation techniques, so that they don't, you know, have to lay hands on people.
Yeah.
But the other thing is really mis- and disinformation. A lot of people believe that people that have mental illnesses are violent. And overwhelmingly, they're not.
Yeah.
But then you see some headline about some, well, this person with a history of mental illness did this or that. But when somebody, you know, gets involved with criminal behavior or shoots up a community, they don't say, well, this person without a history of mental illness did these things.
Right.
And
right.
So we've got the wrong ideas about what it means. And the less people reach out, the less they're likely to get the kind of help that they need. So I just think that it's really important for the community to get their needs met.
Absolutely. Edgar, let me ask you, do you think race is a part of this?
Oh, race is a huge issue.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your bringing that up. Race is a huge issue. One of the things that I found in my work, and that's being an African American, but one of the things that I found is that often our community is the last to reach out because stigma can be a bigger issue for us. Or sometimes people say, well, you know, I'm using my faith, and I think faith is a wonderful tool, but you need faith and you need support from the faith community, but you also need therapy and treatment and medication.
Yeah.
And those things really should not be mutually exclusive. The other concern that I have is that I don't think, you know, when I think about African Americans, and I do a lot of work and training and teaching, not only in crisis intervention, but specifically in suicide. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to groups in churches and in communities, and I talk about suicide, and I'll often get, well, black people don't kill themselves. And I beg to differ. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is that the numbers, especially for young people, for young African Americans, the numbers have been going up over the past several years. I don't think anybody knows why, but one of the things that we do know is that African Americans are less likely to seek help. So race is definitely a barrier, and I've always said that as long as I'm in a position to talk about these issues, I will remind people that, yes, tragically, black folks do die by suicide. Suicide is one of those phenomena that touches all races, all ethnic groups, and sadly, all ages, for kids as young as 5. So, I mean, this is a real issue.
Yeah, yeah. Regarding this in the black community, I mean, what can be done about that? More information from churches, right?
More information. Churches are such an important institution in the African American community, and I really want pastors and ministers and faith leaders to learn as much as they can, because, you know, one of the things that I'm aware of is, you know, it's one thing for somebody to say, well, maybe you need some professional help. But if your minister says it, you're much more likely to get it.
Yeah.
And so churches can really be an important place. Now, one of the things that we've done with some churches is that we have had churches ask us to come in and train their congregations in something called mental health first aid.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you have first aid when you have a physical problem, there's mental health first aid for people that are in crisis with a mental illness. And it's a wonderful training. It's something that we've done for churches because this allows people to feel more comfortable and more confident when engaging somebody.
Right.
You know, we know what to do when somebody's having a heart attack, or many of us do. You know, we know CPR and all that kind of good stuff. But what do you say to somebody that's talking in ways or acting in ways that don't make any sense to you? How do you engage them?
Yeah.
There are methods to do that. What do you say to somebody that's in a suicidal crisis? There are things that you can say. There are ways that you can approach them. And so mental health first aid is a wonderful course that teaches people what to do when there's a crisis.
Let's talk about how pastors and other religious folks and of course non-religious folks, how can folks get that training? Contact
it's
your
organization? It's simply a matter of calling our organization. We have a number of certified trainers for mental health first aid, and they can arrange to come out and work with a group. And there are some shorter courses and some longer courses, but the thing that's important is for people to begin to get that knowledge and that information. And sometimes there's a minor fee because there are workbooks and things like that. But, you know, we're not talking about a lot of money.
Right.
And, of course, we've gotten great feedback from the community groups that we've trained in mental health first aid.
How can somebody get in touch with you?
Oh, our hotline is available 24 hours a day. That number is 410-433-5175. They can also reach out through our website. And the website address is www.bcresponse.org. www.bcresponse.org. And, you know, there are ways to reach out that way or simply make a phone call. We can have somebody call back, and start to talk about that and what would be involved. But the other thing is, not only mental health first aid, but we also have speakers that'll come out and speak to church groups, community groups. It simply is a matter of making a request, because the more people know about services and the more people understand that mental illnesses are illnesses just like any other illness, you know, the better equipped people will be to provide support to people in crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But unfortunately, Edgar, that's all the, we're out of time. Could you give us, please, that contact information one more time, please?
Sure. The hotline number, which is available 24 hours a day, and that number is 410-433-5175. And our website is www.bcresponse.org.
Unfortunately, though, that's all the time we have from Living in Baltimore. I want to thank our guest, Edgar Wiggins, who's Executive Director of Baltimore Crisis Response, Inc., for being our guest today. Thank you, Edgar.
Sure thing.
Keep up your good work for all of us. And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods. And we'll see you next time.